Welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a sometimes funny, trying to be smart podcast covering all things new and classic Trek. Let's fly. I am your captain, Mariah Gossett. With me on the view screen, we have...
Clive Haynes. What you know about that Emerald blockchain?
Oh, and I'm your dilithium-destroying crybaby, Paul.
We are back watching Star Trek Discovery in preparation for its final season coming in April 2024. Tonight, we'll be discussing the back half of season three, episodes 7 through 13. First, just a couple of small reminders. Paul, where can they find information about sharing this show and connecting with us on other platforms?
Sure. You can subscribe to our podcast at Apple, Spotify, YouTube. All links are at StarTrekPod.co. And if you love, like, hate, despise, like, you know, really don't like our podcast, but you want to support us for some reason, consider Patreon. For just $2 an episode at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Indeed. And Clyde, if people are hanging out with us tonight live in the chat, how can they ask us questions, get our attention? What should they do?
Just give us a call at 888-555-1. Seriously, just if you're watching us live, just type capital P, capital O, capital D, capital pod in the chat, and we'll take a look at your comment, your question, your thought, your synopsis, your summary, your executive brief, like whatever it is that you want to say, we'll take a look. We just ask that you be polite to each other, uphold the values of the Federation in the chat, and have fun.
Pre-burn Federation or post-burn Federation?
Pre-burn Federation.
You're old-timer.
Old-timer.
Thanks for the clarification. Yes, and I just as a heads up, I'm on the road, and for some reason my microphone would not work, and we have to replace Clyde's microphone. So we appreciate y'all dealing with our less than stellar audio this week, but it shall be repaired soon. Paul, holding us down with the microphone.
I'm not gonna lie, like, you know, to you hear me the most clearly is probably not the way you want to go. I don't know if I'm the way to go.
Yeah, I brought all my stuff with me on this trip that I am on, and then I plugged it all in and the microphone would not work, and I don't have an extra cord to swap out. So that's my bad. But I'm excited to be back this week. Thanks for potting without me last week. I sent y'all a little hot freaks video, and I'm glad to be back with y'all. I wanted to kind of before we jump into talking about season three, this back half, did y'all get a chance to watch the new trailer?
I did.
I saw a trailer. I don't know if it's new or not. I thought I saw
it. It came out like 6 days ago.
Okay. I watched something again today. So maybe I saw the new trailer.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on our...
I don't know, man. It's like treasure hunt. Like, you know, there's a treasure that's been hidden for centuries, like, you know, been suppressed, blah, blah, blah. And, like, you know, we got Burnham and the crew, like, going on a wild, whatever, Iconian chase. Boom. Old Star Trek reference. Not super old, but anyway.
It's going to be interesting. They're literally doing a big puzzle box.
Like, I wonder if they're going to just make the season very fun, like a fun season as opposed to like a heavy season.
Yeah. It looks fun. Yeah. It looks like action packed. I know they did not know it was going to be the last season going into this season. Mm-hmm. So they did some reshoots, but it'll be interesting. We have a message from the Menagerie about the trailer. Also, if you join us over on Patreon, you can join us in our Slack channel where you can leave us messages to the Menagerie so that we can get your hot takes and freaks about episodes prior to, even if you can't join us during the live stream. And Karen says, I was looking at the Trek movie breakdown of the trailer and the Mirror U inverse speculation that it may be Mirror Universe Zora made me wonder, could they possibly set up that Calypso from Short Treks is actually in the Mirror Universe?
Ooh.
Thoughts?
Nice.
don't know.
I know there's like, been some a lot of conversation online about it potentially having some Mirror Universe episodes.
Like, Mirror Universe is supposed to be like very far apart, right? Like, you know, right now. So I don't know if they will go back on that. And go ahead, I'm not gonna say I'm sorry, but like, you know, Mirror Universe without Giorgio.
I mean,
I know, but what if they're just hiding her from the previews so that we're all very surprised?
Maybe.
Do you guys want to see another Mirrorverse episode? Look, I could be jaded because we watched a lot of episodes back to back to back to back to back. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm a little Mirrorversed out.
I think the Mirrorverse, I mean, kind of diving into, I guess we can just dive in because I have some thoughts on mm-hmm. the Mirror Universe episodes we just watched in preparation for this. So let's jump into some
cold freak.
Let's jump into some cold breaks. yeah, these are some of my favorite Mirror Universe episodes are in this back half of this season. But what did y'all think about them?
Oh, they're two of my favorite episodes of all Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I really enjoy, like, it is one, my only note about the Mirrorverse is that in this Mirrorverse, I guess it's always this way. Everyone's always so, like, hamming it up.
Twirly mustache-y.
Yeah, like, everyone is, like, you know, has the subtext. They're like, and, you know, and so, exactly. And so I go, like, okay, I'm going to let that slide, but, like, It just seems like a little too much that way. But, you know, I think the storytelling is great. I really like Giorgio and Saru hanging out, like, you know, in a way that is tender. I like, you know, I like the fact, like, I don't exactly know why Giorgio really likes old Burnham at mm-hmm. all, because old Burnham, like, you know, is just so ugh.
Well, do you think it's because she knows what Burnham could be? Do you know, it's kind of, it feels like the inverse, I feel like, from the first season, where it's like our Mirror Universe Giorgio knows what Burnham is capable of in her universe, so she mm-hmm. does become attached to mm-hmm. our universe, like to Prime Burnham. Then in this version, because she knows the capabilities of Prime Burnham, is like, oh, my Burnham could also potentially be that.
Oh, 100%. And it's also that Taryn Burnham is her Burnham, right?
Yeah.
And it's a big deal. Like, I think one of the things that we saw is even in the Taryn universe, Giorgio had an issue with being truly ruthless to even Prime Burnham when she was like, mm-hmm. you're not my Burnham. Like, at the end of the day, Giorgio has this love, this motherly love for Burnham that doesn't matter if you're Prime or Taryn. She's like, you're Burnham, and there's a limit to my madness, right? And I think that's kind of what it comes down to, is there's a limit that she'll go when Burnham's involved, right? She'll slit everybody else without a second mm-hmm. thought, right? But she's also grown quite a bit, so she's not the same person. She's evolved. So it's
or devolved. This
was, I mean, I depends. It's how you look at it. I thought this was a really well done Mirrorverse episode. Like, it often, I feel like we get Mirrorverse episodes as almost like a novelty of like, what if we went through the looking glass? This mm-hmm. felt like it had a true purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and not just a vehicle for storytelling, but like, we're going to show the evolution of this character. We're going to give them, it felt much more like, go back in time and make different decisions than a true Mirrorverse episode.
Yeah, I think you put the phaser on the target. Like, you know, I think it masks as a Mirrorverse universe, but it is actually a redo storyline. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if I could turn back time.
We love turning back time on Star Trek. To turn back time a little bit and jump back to episode 7, kind of where we're starting on this back mm-hmm. half, Unification Part 3. I really enjoyed this. This to me felt like the Discovery courtroom episode. that we hadn't gotten really yet in the series. So it was kind of refreshing to kind of approach an episode in this way for me. I also really loved the opportunity for Burnham to get to see what Spock was capable of after she left. It, to me, it felt like a really nice moment of closure of like the past for Burnham as a character. But what did y'all think of, you know, this particular episode? It also presented us with President Tarina, which we know eventually becomes Saru's love interest, which is like a fun little arc. And I really enjoy those two characters together. But we also get the big reveal of the murder nuns.
I'll say that there are bits and pieces of this episode that I really liked. I thought that the reveal of bringing Burnham's mom back into the fold was excellent. And it's just, it's so interesting that in this season, within a few episodes, we get the dynamic of Burnham losing her mother and gaining her mother in two different characters. And so this just, this ideal of family and someone who knows you almost better than you know yourself is really important to Burnham. And so this was an episode that more than just a kind of a court, you know, drama, this was about, do you really know yourself and the evolution of Burnham? I think what I took away from this episode was this foundation of Burnham's been without Discovery for a year. She's trying to figure out if she fits in. She's kind of going rogue. And really from this episode through the end, it's this journey of how do we make sure that Burnham knows she should be in the seat? And everyone from Mom to Giorgio to Vance all give Burnham this sense of, no, this journey that you've been going on has finally prepared you to sit in the chair like no other has come before you. So I like it for what it was as an episode, a pure just solitary episode. It was cool.
Yeah. Paul, did you have any thoughts?
I thought, meh. No.
I thought it was a really interesting. I remember even on first watch being like, man, I was a little angry at Gabrielle in the way that she was like momming Burnham in this situation, because it is such a huge leap into the future. And like, you know, there's so much you can see of how Burnham was raised on Vulcan. And, you know, I'm sure that was very complicated for Gabrielle. And so I always kind of go back and forth on like what that, you know, must be like to try to figure out how to approach from a character standpoint of like, you are this character's mom, but you have not raised this person, you know, in a lot of ways.
I mean, like you raised them till they were like, what, 7 or whatever she was when.
Like 10 or 11 or something.
Whatever. So that's significant. Like right. She missed teenage years. Like, I think for me, like, I wanted something more Vulcan-y and Romulan-y in a way that, like, whereas, like, these guys just seem to be...
It took place all in the ship. I always feel like if they had gone down to the planet.
Yeah, like, you know, like, it didn't really fit my... It didn't scratch that fan itch. I think that, like, I think the script itself is fine, the acting is fine, although the Vulcans do seem to be, like, needless jerks. You know, and the mom did seem to be, like, really not as hopeful as she could have been, you know, like even at, in the role of warrior nun, like, you know, and the solution is not necessarily my favorite, but whatever, you know, it's all fine. That's not a big issue. I just think that like Vulcans are like, imagine if we got to see Klingons in, you know, 900 years in the future, and all you saw with them in your ship. like here's this pivotal, like, foundational, like, you know, species, and like what would have what does it look like to have like Romulans and Vulcans reunite? Like, I have no idea, except for that they're bitching at each other and they're ready to break up.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how those cultures were meshed together. And you know, Chupi in the chat brings up an interesting point of like, it's too bad they didn't have the AR wall really up and running yet at this point.
Yeah.
We probably would have been on the planet for the sake of production.
Yeah.
Because, like, we don't get that.
I'm not blaming the episode. I'm just saying, as far as what the promise of the episode was.
The promise of the premise, if you will.
There you go. Like, even with, like, you know, going back to Earth, like, you got to see the shot of, like, them on Earth with the cities all beautiful and the tree. So it didn't need to be so much. It was just, like, I got none of it. And, you know, and Vulcans themselves are so cold anyway that, like, you know, that, like, it just feels like, oh, are they fighting a robot? I don't know.
I did love the Murder Nun costumes, though. And I was thinking, has Giraffe done that cosplay yet? Has she done a
co-op? I don't think so. But I'm sure if you sent a request along with money and materials, that could happen.
I'll just get a spool of a black fabric and a veil.
Yeah. Get to it. It would be cool. I know she's been working on one of the characters from Lower Decks that was played by Janelle James. Oh my gosh, I'm blanking. I'm sorry, y'all. It's late and I've been traveling a lot. But they come on board and it's when Talyn goes through, like, you know, her sadness over the message, but they think it's because these other people, the same species as Troy. The Betazoids. Anyway, there it is. The one with the cool, like, giraffe print costume that was, like, literally made for a giraffe to be making. Okay, that was a long tangent, sorry guys. Let's go ahead and jump into the sanctuary. I wanted to chat because I didn't get to really chat with y'all last week about what are your thoughts on Osyra. I really enjoyed Osyra as a big bad, and I remember by the end of this season I was really sad that it was over.
Yeah, me too. I really like Osyra. Like, we'll get to it, but, like, you know, we'll talk. But, like,
you're talking about this the Sanctuary episode, which is directed by Jonathan Frakes, which is really fun. Written by Kenneth Lynn and Brandon Schultz. Also, just to plug, Unification Part 3 was directed by John Dukowski, written by Kristen Baer. We get, you know, the Emerald Chain sort of, like, standoff with Book at Quajon.
I think one thing that struck me was, and I'll just say it, so often in Star Trek, there's this sexualization of Orions, especially women. And Osyra is the complete different take on that.
Right.
I don't know. She's a hottie.
I mean, she's still hot. I agree with you, Clyde. It isn't like she doesn't use her sexuality as a part of her power struggle, right? Or like how she uses to gain power over people.
She's also not dressed as like she's straight out of I Dream a Genie either. So it forces you to deal with her in a very different way. And what I was trying to really think about was, does that make her brutality more brutal or less? Right? Because she's so ruthless that, I guess it's in a later episode, I don't want to skip too far ahead, but, you know, her nephew from the sanctuary, she basically just destroys, like, just tosses him in a cage and lets him get eaten by a transworm.
Spoilers.
Spoiler. I don't know why you listened to this.
This is all spoilers. But it's just,
no, but from the moment she comes on screen, we're like, oh, you think you've seen a big bad? Well, look out, because I'm on another level. And so I thought she was a great big bad, as big bads go. Fascinating, in fact. So
I think, like, there's a later episode. I think it's the second to last. She goes, like, to her friend, the human friend, and goes, like, look, you know, I know what's in your heart, that he says. And she goes, like, oh, the Reinhardt has six valves. Like, you know, we're so much infinitely more complex than you. We can go both way, you know, different mm-hmm. directions at the same time. Like, and then she chokes him out. and I really like Osiris in that way, because I think, like, if they didn't kill her off, and if they wanted to go in and make her like, you know, a recurring character, mm-hmm. you could see how nuanced and layered she could be, you know, because she's a little mustache twirling in the first couple episodes, but she
gets very complex and cunning. Like, her the mental game that she plays is smart.
She's smart. Like, you know, yeah, you go, Maria, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was like, the chat is talking about, like, in comparison to what we've kind of learned from the Lower Decks episodes, and you know, funny moment as, you know, a mistress of the winter constellations wannabe. But to me, it's like Osiris does feel more connected, I think, to what we saw in the Lower Decks episodes about the Orions. Like, you know, this is like the ultimate mustache twirly segment of that, you know, but to me, she was a more complex character with more layers, I think, than we had seen from a lot of other Orion villains. Like, to your point, Paul, it's like, I think she could have been built out to have been a reoccurring villain character that we could have seen more of.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like, you go with Clyde.
Oh, I would say there are two things for me. One, I look at her in the context of this post-apocalyptic, like, mm-hmm. space opera Mad Max, right? Like, Osiris feels like a character that, unlike Tendi, who came from royalty, Osiris scrappy and kind of pulled this together after the burn, right? Like, I was waiting the entire time for her to go, you have no idea from the hell in which I came from. Like, there was this monologue that I was waiting to talk about where she was going to talk about her background and, like, you know, when, like, she's very, in a sense, Volk-esque, right? Like,
yeah,
she's just put it together. So I see her in that context, which is a little bit different. But I also think it was a bit of a wait. Like, she would have been great as an introduction in the first couple episodes. And I don't necessarily think you needed to kill her. I think having her out there, and again, I've got the benefit of having seen 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably, to me, one of the stronger villains. Zara was nonsense to me. So you could have really brought her in at the beginning and had her been the overarching villain for 13 episodes rather mm-hmm. than just really bring her in the last, like, 5.
Yeah, or, like, foreshadow her more with Zara. Like, maybe, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, if Zara is, like, a henchman of Osiris, it's like, I kind of wish we had gotten a little bit more of a hint of her at the beginning, I think, to help build the full mm-hmm. arc of the character out. Because, you know, we've talked about this with other Discovery seasons. This one, luckily, really only has, like, 2 big puzzles that are kind of trying to be, well, I guess there are more character ones, but you know what I mean? Like, overall, it's like we have Osiris and then we also have the burn, and, like, these are kind of our intersections of the main plot, like our A and B plots, right? And then we have all the inter-character ones. But to me, it's like Osiris at some points became far more interesting than solving the burn.
Yeah, I was gonna say the same thing. I was trying not to jump ahead, but spoilers. Especially when you look at these episodes, these last few episodes together,
mm-hmm.
I was bored with the burn stuff and was way more interested in the, like,
Orion politicking.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I didn't love her, like, trying to cut a deal with Starfleet, but the running around the ship trying to kill each other and the craftiness in which she captured Discovery was like, no, this is good stuff.
Well, I think it was also like Osiris felt like the burn is, you know, the causation for why the society is collapsed, but Osiris is a representation of the collapse of the society. So you're really getting, I think, most of the world building to me off of the Osiris plot line. Sure. And that to me was more interesting, since we've never been in this universe before and Trek to figure out where we're placing all of our characters, is like Osiris really representing this new world that they have to function in. And, like, I don't know. It would have been interesting to see how they would have solved how to bring together the Federation with the threat of the Emerald Chain kind of coming through. And to me, it's that it's that battle of like ideals and socialism versus like capitalism. Right. And like, that is such an interesting push pull to me.
You know, like I would have preferred that over Space Whale in season four. I'm just saying, like, you know, like, but I think, like, I was on a different podcast earlier this week, Intergalactic with Mike Rudy Garcia. Yeah.
I was about to say, you cheating on his poll? What's going on? Okay,
Aren't you on that podcast? Isn't that your SG1 podcast?
Yeah, it was so, like Clyde's also. Yes. I have also been on that show. Yeah,
that's right.
A couple times.
So we're talking about Babylon 5 and how, like, they're both shows that really, really speak to me. But like, Star Trek has like, oh, we've achieved, you know, we've achieved paradise, and that in its space socialism. But in Babylon 5, you're watching us. How do we achieve space socialism? How do we achieve going from who we are to where we want to be? And in some ways, I look at the Emerald Chain and goes, that seems to be more of, you know, where you're at. Like, you know, like no one wants, you know, no one wants everyone to suffer. No one wants Mad Max in particular. Even the people who are on top of Mad Max don't want Mad Max. You know, like, do you want, you know, you kind of want 90s America, like in The Matrix, the top of the best of the humanity right there, boo. Or not, I don't know.
We've achieved but like, it.
But you know, but you can see how they're struggling. Like, you know, Ferengis are that way, right? Ferengis, they don't have socialism.
Oh, I want to see Ferengis in this world of the Emerald Chain. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think to me, it's like, if I was to, you know, be kind of like, put all the plot points that they're thinking about for seasons, it's like, what could have been an interesting way to format it. And I know it's so hard, I think, in the world of streaming, because you never know when you're going to get the cut. But I'm like, if The Burn had been like a multi-season long mystery, that's like slowly coming together. And then season, the arc is, how do you exist in the world of the Emerald Chain and take the Emerald Chain down?
I think it
would have been,
make this Captain Admiral.
Like, yeah, I agree. But I think what you have to do with that is, The Burn can't be this huge mystery, because we just kept figuring, like I think it almost has to be subtle. Like, you got to get us to accept that The Burn is a thing, and then give us these breadcrumbs throughout. And that's how you get it kind of multiple seasons. But also, I think there was this opportunity to kind of create this Federation and anti-Federation divide, right? Where maybe you have some Federation societies, and then maybe you end up with, like, you know, the Cardassians or the Ferengi or something, where you've got, you know, you've got the Orions and the Andorians, and you've got this coalition. And over the course of a couple seasons, maybe you're looking at, you know, recruiting more or losing, and the dynamics between that and true kind of space politics. That might have been fascinating. But I think there was something here with the Orions where it was like, this is a culture that has a deep mythology and it's interesting, that you can play it out for a little bit and really kind of dive in. But it does feel like Discovery kind of, like, again, we went deep into the Klingons and then we don't see them again. We haven't seen or talked about a Klingon since like season one.
Yeah, I know. And then to me, it's like, then you introduce, it's like, because we also have these interesting interpersonal plot lines where we do have Adira and Gray and like that situation kind of coming through, because I so enjoyed that Trill episode. And like, getting to go to the Trill homeworld, and like, you know, I know
we're done talking about that, Mariah. Like, that was last week.
I know it's the first, but
we're done. We're done. It's been said. It's all been said.
I think it's because the first half of the season, we get like a nice amount of world building plus interpersonal plot points that to me, I was like, ooh, I'm really enjoying this part. And then we get into, oh, now we have to solve the big puzzle and we have to solve the big bad. And so then we kind of have to like push away, I think, some of this interpersonal stuff. But then we bring in like Giorgio is appearing to be ill. So we've introduced yet another like interpersonal plot point. And yeah, anyway, it's always a little crowded in Discovery, yeah. usually come out dense. The other side and enjoy it. Yeah, it's just dense. It's a lot dense. Happens every season.
but to your point, Mariah, it like there's a lot. I felt like that was left on the bone from an Orion Emerald Chain standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like you have to figure that there's Orions who disagree with, right.
Like, is there a rebellion group?
Right. And so there's like, and I think we never really scratched the surface of understanding what Orion culture and a pulse burn society actually looks like. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot, like that's just a lot. It's
like the mercantile in the beginning of the season, like that is interesting. Those are obviously mm-hmm. people kind of functioning within and outside of the Emerald Chain system.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, you know, it like Orions are. Because I'm racist and I'm just gonna go through stereotypes. Orions are
Paul. Suited. One day these clips are gonna get master cut mm-hmm. together in a way that's right. not gonna be good for you.
It's gonna be blown, like it goes like I'm stereotyping and then you know it goes wait no I was talking about Orions. Who?
Yeah, Paul, you can't run mm-hmm. for office. That's over.
It's already over. Anyway, like you know, I think their value system. Was particularly well suited for post burn because like for all of it they are might makes right but more exploit makes right right that's their kind of credo a little bit like if you have the power then you as opposed to like Klingons would be strength you know and Romulans would be cunning and you know whatever but like you know and so here is Orion's going into like everyone is now down to zero and if I can just you know I can just like you know leverage that I will win because I'm more ruthless in the Kaiser Soze kind of way and you know it's you know it, so I really like how it actually is pretty clever that the Andorians and Orion chain, Orion came together to make the chain. I really like that. Anyway, we can move on. I'm sorry. I'm just babbling.
I mean, we're on a podcast, Paul. We're supposed to babble.
Babble.
Okay. Going into, I think, some of our favorite episodes of the season, Terra Firma. I mean, do y'all remember how incredible the Carl reveal was? Like, in that moment. That was such a fun reveal to me, at least.
I really like. I like it when things get surreally, not surreal-y, mm-hmm. but surreal, like you know, and mm-hmm. for whatever reason, like a door in the middle of snow, it's just really pretty, and you're like, oh, that's cool. It's striking in a way.
Yeah, it reminded me of some of you know like. I don't know, some of those just like really fun, weird original series episodes mm-hmm. when they are just on like, they've gone out to the desert somewhere to replicate the planet. And there's like some small structure that represents something crazy is about to happen, you know, or like,
Sure.
What does God need with a starship type of nonsensory, but in like the most fun, I don't know, OG Star Trek kind of way, it was. This episode to me really, really hit it for me.
Yeah. And good dialogue too. Like, you know, like Carl had great, you know, like,
yeah. So great. The episode, with, Terra Firma part one was directed by, part one's Omar, Madha and teleplay by Alan McElroy, story by Bo Young Kim and Eric Lippolt and Alan McElroy. And then part two was directed by Chloe Dormit, teleplay by Kalinda Vasquez, written by Bo Young Kim and Erica Lapolt, as well as Alan McElroy. So I usually really like Bo Young Kim and Eric Gillipold episodes of Discovery. So to me, this makes sense in my fantasy of Star Trek.
Sure, sure. But yeah, you know, like Giorgio's dying. She's being a little baby about it. Burnham like challenges her to go on a planet, and then they go on a planet. Like, you know, Saru says, "I don't think I'm gonna see you again." So I learned a lot from you, you know, and that's great, you know. And then, you know,
also Cronenberg, we get some Cronenberg nonsensory.
Yeah, it's all good. It's a good episode. I've talked a lot about it, so I'm going to shut up now.
I like this episode, or this couple episodes.
Double episode,
Yeah, it is. I just thought it was really well done. I thought it was a fantastic send off for Giorgio and Michelle Yeoh. Like, I mean, a great send off to the point where you go, this is so good. The plan is for her never to come back. And like it almost forces you to sit with that a little bit and be like, I'm not sure how I feel about that. But I also thought it was I thought it tied up the mirror universe really well, explained it and made it not gimmicky, but like, hey, here's what's going on. And the idea that they're drifting apart. Like they explain so much in such a fairly elegant way that it didn't feel preachy or monologue-y. That when it was all said and done, you know, Paul and I, we mentioned it earlier, it's a do-over. And the ability for you to see Michelle Yeoh, Giorgio, with this conflict on her face, right? Like at this point, it's become absolutely clear how a Terran should move, right? But she spent most of this season explaining how in my universe, we would do it this way. In my universe, I would have slit your throat. In my universe, I would have done this. Well, she didn't even recognize how she was changing, and then put in her universe, she couldn't do those things that seemingly were so easy before. Watching that was really just like, it was awesome. Like, it was incredible to see that. Plus you have this marriage of interesting philosophy and incredible fight scenes. Like, I don't know how that gets any better.
That's it. Thanks. That
and top, like top the episode. It's great. And then like the play, I just love the over dramaticness of the play and getting to see you know, Stamets go full Broadway. it was really fun, and just like, yeah, it was a spectacle. It felt like a spectacle. It felt like to your point, Clyde, like a true send off of Giorgio in a true way to be like, Michelle Yeoh, you're gone from here, but never forgotten, you know, from this particular series. And it will be interesting next season because it will, you know, be, I mean, I guess in 4, we also didn't have Giorgio, but it's like, I don't know. It's like the farther we get away from her, the farther it feels, you know, like in some ways.
Sure.
But also the closer we get to the Section 31 movie. So,
I, you know, not to skip ahead too much, but I got to say, I didn't love Captain Tilly.
You didn't like Killy? Oh
no, Killy I like. Captain Tilly.
Oh, like, yes.
Tilly is first officer.
When we get there, we'll talk that because I have some thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, we can jump. I feel like we could probably talk a long time about our love for these episodes and like the detail and the fight sequences. And it is like, these are episodes that if I feel like I just want to put something on that's really fun, I would put these episodes on.
Yeah.
I think they're great. These should be the ones we add to like our, maybe at Comic-Con next year, we do Introduction to the Mirror Universe as our panel. and talk about
like,
some of these.
Like these two are great.
Yeah, we can go ahead and jump to 11 at Sukal. This was directed by Norma Bailey, written by Ann Coffel Sanders. We finally get to, you know, we detect the life sign on the starship. Saru is like, I think this is, you know, one of the potential children of the scientists. And then we have Saru, Burnham, and Culver transporting to the planet, leaving Tilly in command of Discovery. You know, so, some chaos, as you say, ensues.
here's my experience. It took me 5 tries to watch this episode.
Interesting.
Because like the way I remember it is Tilly screwed up and got the how long did it take to cloak, you know, all that stuff. But watching it again, I go like, you know what? Am I just hating on Tilly? Because she didn't do anything really wrong. You know, like she basically did everything she could, and then like, you know, Crybaby decided to make a scream, uncloak them, you know, and then the bad guys got on board. Like, you know, she didn't do anything wrong. But for some reason my first memory was like she messed up. Oh, are you gonna I support women, Clyde.
I'm too, but you say she did. I do. I love women. Huh? Women are fantastic. Why was the ship still sitting there? Like, you're gonna cloak. Can you move away? Move away from the big massive ship.
You're still waiting.
Like, go for somewhere else.
But I mean, you got an away team down there. It's a big, it's a big old crazy nebula.
Yeah, just move 100 kilometers in a different direction so they don't know, I don't know, exactly where you are.
But they didn't
cloak and stayed in the same spot. Come on.
Well, I don't know, Clyde. You know, we also don't teleport admirals out of bomb sequence areas.
Yes. I'm going to push against that a little bit. Like, how do you know they stayed in the same spot? Like, you know, like if you're
because when they reappeared, they were right next to each other again. So unless
that's where the camera was, but like, you know, but you have this is a vacuum of space. This is a vacuum of space. Like, you know, they could have moved. Like, you know, and just looked this.
And way also, does it really matter where they are? As long as that goes down, you can still teleport onto the ship.
I think you want
to like they'd have to be pretty far away. I think.
Yeah. Now, I think fair. What I don't understand is how they beamed over. Like, you know, like where the shield's not up. Do the shields have to go away with Black Alert? All these things are, you know, this is where I can I can go like, oh. If the shields, because they're not old shields. These are new shields, right? These are like upgraded, like, not, you know, 3,000 shields. So how did Osira like beam in? I don't know. I'm gonna assume that like that Tilly didn't mess up. But like, you know,
Chibi makes a point about like, is there a bunch of interference because of the atmospheric dilution situation? I mean, yeah, it's potential that there's like issues with the shield and all of these things. I do like the idea of moving away from the pondering interference. I mean, but it is interesting to think about, like, is it truly a mistake or is it just a series of unfortunate events?
Yeah,
I will go with a series of unfortunate events and not say that it was Tilly's fault. But
like, I remember walking away from, you know, from my first watch and going like, Tilly, you ain't no Killy. That's why I remember that's why I had such a hard time watching this. I was going like, oh, I'm so pissed off at you. And then you're like, oh, maybe that was no reason. Maybe I made a big kerfuffle about nothing. Or maybe I was really upset because we're so long in a holodeck episode. Oh my god, 3 episodes in a holodeck. Shoot me with a phaser. Like, oh my god, like full spread torpedoes in my face.
You know, it's interesting. I think you might be on something, Paul, in that maybe the issue that some of us have with Tilly is that we have these expectations of Killy, right? Like, when Osira comes onto the screen and she says something red, I fully expected Tilly to come back at her and go, no, you will never get the ship green. Like, I expected her to, but that's much more of a Killy, right? And not Tilly. And so I think some of it is that even when we watch, you know, Terra Firma Part 1 and 2, Killy moves with this confidence that is not hard. Like, Tilly naturally feels soft, but that confidence, that swagger that Killy has, is like she's smiling, but what she's actually saying is horrific, right? I was expecting a little bit more of that as her as captain, not like maybe not like the really horrific stuff, but just more confident.
She's had practice. She played Killy in season one. So like,
And in fairness, we do see quite a bit of leadership of her outside of the chair.
She's totally fine. She's totally fine, you know?
I think there's also like the emotional impact of like jumping so far into the future and feeling like, you know, I think there is that struggle of like you feel ready for leadership, but not tossed all the way into the deep end of the pool. Does that make sense? Well, like to go all the way to number one.
I'm going to say it right now, like, you know, Saru screwed up. It isn't Saru's fault. Like, you know, like you don't like if you here's a cadet. Oh, like 2 years later, you want to be first officer. It doesn't happen that way. You know, like here's the real problem. The real problem is this, like, you know, you go back to Admiral Vance. How did this happen? It doesn't matter that Tilly didn't do anything. I mean,
Vance makes a big old mistake later anyway.
It doesn't matter that Tilly didn't do anything, you know, like she shouldn't have been put in the chair to be able to make that, to be on that watch. In my opinion.
Yeah, it is interesting.
No, I'm with you. Because if you're Nielsen, aren't you pissed? Like, aren't you really
right? Like Nielsen is in the chair all the time when no one else is on the bridge. You see Reese in the chair all the time. I feel like you could also count on Kayla or a Woshakun. And like,
I mean, like Tilly's a bit of a Nepo baby. I'm just saying, like, oh, you're my favorite. You're my favorite.
Have we ever seen a jump like this? Like, I think that's the hard thing to swallow. Is like she went from like cadet to ensign to first officer.
Oh, you mean like going from cadet to captain, like in Abrams Star Trek, or Picard?
Yes, like, you know, yes. But we've taken shots at those too, though, right? We don't just let those slide.
Oh, like you know, like oh, I'm the child of Beverly Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard. Oh, I go straight to executive office. Oh, I don't even go to Starfleet Academy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, well, so this is not good. This is, you know, for a show that should be a little more that prides itself on being like woke and like fair and all that stuff. Like a lot of the things, you know. Like I remember I was on a podcast with this person and I was saying how Shaw was just defending his ship and this guy just came at me and goes, but this is Picard. This is Riker. They get that privilege. I go like, oh, it doesn't look good coming from you, dude.
I got this close to removing him from the episode.
You're almost kicked out of the chat, Paul. Well, speaking of other people making mistakes, we can jump to episode 12. There is a tie directed by Jonathan Frakes, written by Kenneth Lynn. This is, you know, Asira tricking Vance, getting into Federation.
Well, like
you know, like, we got Culber and Burnham in a big old fight by the end of this episode.
Stamets, right?
Stamets.
Sorry. Excuse me. Yeah. Stamets.
I feel like, shouldn't we have learned, like, here's the thing. Has there ever been a time where a ship approaches and comms are down and when you let them in, everything's okay? Listen, if you can't talk to me on comms, I'm not letting you in. Right? You need to park that thing.
Can you scan the ship and be like, who's on board?
Get in a shuttle or something, but I'm letting you sit out there. Like,
well, see,
no comms, there's a problem.
See, here's the thing. What you don't see, Clyde, is like this happens all the time, and like this is the only one time it was a bad guy. Like normally they save all these ships. Like Voyager comes in, like oh they're shooting us. I can't. I don't know. I don't actually blame Vance for that. Like,
I mean, I think to kind of our point earlier, it points to like Osira is really freaking clever.
Yeah.
And she's like smart. Knows where these weakness points are and is able to like use them to her advantage.
Yeah, Sarah's so good. Like, you know, like they really put a good foundation for her for to be someone more. Anyway, but yeah. So this is the episode where you go.
Oh, I was just like, I think this episode was really exciting because you had so much like action. You had a lot of stakes. You had a lot of things building, mm-hmm. I think, into this like final, you know, episode run. And kind of like, I thought it was a really successful, you know, preeminent finale, yeah. You know,
like for me, like
this, that was the word I was looking for.
To me, the episode revolved around Osyra and Vance for me. That was the mm-hmm. thing I was interested in. And for all of it, like, I really enjoyed how Osyra was going, look, dude, we should merge, and I'm willing to give up all this stuff so we can merge. And there's mm-hmm. a lie detector dude there. And so, mm-hmm. like, she really means it. I mean, like, she really means it, like, you know. And I can see why. I can see why, because, like, you know, they're running out of dilithium, so mm-hmm. they have no choice, you know. But, you know, for all of it, good faith. Although with Osyra, because she's Orion, like, you know, she could probably change immediately because, like, you know, mm-hmm. the blood flows both ways. But, like, you know, there's a part of me where like, oh, you know, there's a reason to not take Osyra's offer. I don't know mm-hmm. if I would buy Vance's reason. You know, like, it's one of those things where, like, here are some horrific things that you had to do to survive. And then, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, you're back in civilization. And you go, like, well, you did these things, so you gotta stand trial. That's a really weak argument. Agreed, the chain is known for exploitation, and mm-hmm. I've seen people's head blow off because, like, you know, they couldn't pay a debt. But, you know, you can make an argument.
I'm so mad I didn't get to talk about the Prison Break episode with you guys.
Oh yeah, anyway. It's so funny. We're done. We're done with it. Like, no one's ever going to talk about it again. Anyway, but like, I just really like how she laid it out, and like Vance just went too far. Like there are reasons to not sign the document, right? There's mm-hmm. definitely but I want one more thing. You gotta go to jail, mm-hmm. but we'll be fair. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like that. I don't like that. Anyway, I'll shut up now.
No, I think I really enjoyed the Vance Osyra episodes, and you know, I think to me this was the episode that really sealed Vance as like a great admiral and character to me. Like, I see your point, Paul, and like he probably was. But I mean, in the end, I think he thought he was doing the correct thing, and that's all he sure. can do, right? Is like act from that point, and I think,
or talk to the president of the Federation, as opposed to he's an admiral.
Get Stacey Abrams in here.
That's Earth, like, you know, the president's but like, you know, like he made a call that was really weird. And I'm not saying that, Chupi, just to address you. I'm not saying that, like, that Osyra should be a part of it. I'm just saying that him asking for her to go to jail was probably more than.
I think he also could have been a little sneakier about it. I don't know. Be a little bit of a bad role. Like, be like, I'll sign this deal and put this really tiny clause down here at the bottom about you going to jail. I don't know. Or yeah, just like found a way to do it afterwards. I know we haven't really been talking about the nebula like world that was built up for the child, for Sokol. But I remember being so excited to see Doug Jones out of makeup for these episodes. It was kind of like a fun change of pace. I'm sure also very fun for him to not have to be in all that makeup for a couple episodes. And I thought the like interactive like world building that was I was like, I see where they spent budget on these last couple of episodes, and I thought it was really cool world building.
It was kind of cool to see Doug Jones out of makeup. Mm-hmm. It was actually very cool. But I have to agree with Paul. Three episodes of a holodeck in a weird world was a lot.
And I'm gonna tell you right now, like, you know, the burn is a great hook. But to have, like, you know, some like crybaby cause, like, you know, destruction of the Federation, I don't know, man. I think that's a little dopey. That's like some Q level shit. And it's just this kid going, oh, my mom died. Boom. You know, like it's a lot. It's a lot.
I still don't understand why that.
Okay,
I try not to think about it.
I'll break down. As you know, dilithium has a subspace component in it. And in utero, the radiation bonded him with that subspace connection. And so when he had a real strong emotion, it resonated with the subspace field.
He's genetically part dilithium.
I get the explanation.
And because like there was so much dilithium in the planet, like that resonated across the galaxy and made dilithium inert. Come on, it's basic, like physiology. Oh my god,
Clyde. I'm gonna be completely honest here. My love of Star Trek has really helped me not think about this. This is like I'm giving them a mulligan because I think this was terrible.
So basically what you're saying is like the reasoning for the burn is like that kelp monster that Sukal couldn't face. You just kept turning away so you could live in peace. But like in order to be a true Trek, you have to embrace the good and the bad, the pew pews and the embarrassing moments.
Here's the other thing. We talked about this when we watched it the first time. It's about payoff. Right.
Yeah. Sure.
Like you set up this entire season to really focus on the burn, mm-hmm. and like at every turn, and so I'm really expecting something like really incredible,
like space whales.
Listen, I'm not a fan of whales or space whales, but I can like the bar was just higher. The bar was set for me. The bar was set higher. And this, an emotional outbreak causes millions of people to die?
It's like, to accidentally? Me, I feel like they were trying to, in my mind, they're trying to put together that emotional health and emotional well-being and like our emotions are powerful. To me, that's like what they're trying to say with this, right? Mm-hmm. And what I think could have accomplished it in a slightly more interesting way would have been like, maybe it was like this dilithium supply was found. They brought all of these, like, you know, maybe there was some like corruption of the mining of this dilithium in some way. There was a big uprisal and like all of this crowd of people all together that have been working on this mine caused an explosion here, which then caused like
a resident in subspace.
A resonant in subspace, like I don't know, but then I it's a pretty monumental task, and I don't know if any solution we come up with or they could have come up with.
And this is the problem with the puzzle box. This is the problem with the puzzle box, because if you just go with question mark after question mark after question mark, eventually you're going to be let down. Like that's why you should always start, I believe, with the answer first,
with the solution.
Mm-hmm. That way, you know. Anyway, but to Chupi's point, like I'm not like I understand a kid crying, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm totally down with that. I think that the storyline of Sukal is great, minus the burn.
Agreed.
What if we found out dilithium is like a living being? You know what I mean? Like maybe it was like I don't know.
Maybe the ship crashed into like. That lithium rock monster, and the rock monster goes like, "No more!" into subspace.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
I like what you're saying.
Maybe there is a cue. I don't know.
it's all fine. Like, you know, I understand the idea of like trying to say that like feelings matter. I just think like, you know, is this the show or even the way to do it? I think no one thinks that this is successful, you know, as far as fans go. I don't know. I don't know if anyone like thought that. They go like, oh yeah, no, that's like Sukal having like, you know, like that lithium resonance breath. That, you know, I don't think anyone goes.
So for me, if there was a situation where Sakaal had the missing piece to understanding what the burn was, and because of his pain, there was an almost impenetrable shield, right, hiding or cloaking that piece. Mm-hmm. And so them freeing Sakaal then uncovers the piece that now they have to figure out what happened to the burn would have made much more sense. I get the understanding of the emotion and how that does things, but just the connection of those two.
Like, I would be okay. Yeah, I'd be okay if there was like there was an ancient civilization and Sakaal, you know, was parents were dying and like the parents had never, you know, this is whatever, like there's a button that he pushes and that was the thing that caused it because he pushed it in such anger. I don't know. Like you make that work out, but like that would be better than like, well, you know, he was a baby and then you get magic powers. Have you seen X-Men? That seems it. Anyway, not to gripe on that, but like, you know, but that, you know,
yeah.
So here, and here's the thing that I'm left with. If you take that piece out, this 3-episode arc is actually really good.
It's fine. Yeah, you go, Mariah. I'm over.
Oh, I was like, yeah, because like anything around Osyra and like the struggles between the Emerald Chain and the Federation is great story. The battles are great. The hand-to-hand combat is great. I also like constantly remind myself that Sonequa Martin-Green was pregnant while shooting these last few episodes and is doing all of these fight sequences and is doing an incredible job. And like, it's like that final fight sequence, just great. The tension between Burnham and Stamets, I thought was also really interesting. And I had wished that gotten played out more in the next season. Like, to me, that was like such a great emotional character cliffhanger of like, of this disappointment, but like sense of duty. And like, to me, that was like so interesting and complicated.
Yeah, no, I don't know what to say with that. Like, you know, like, I feel like Stamets was being really anti-Federation at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, a lot of these characters had that like brush with death as they jumped into the future. And I think it really reestablished what was like potentially more important to them. And I think Burnham at this point knows that the Federation is one of the most important pieces of her life. And I thought the move into Captain felt very well earned by the end of this season for Burnham. Finally to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Did we do it?
It's like Chippy says, I think the explanation, which was fairly rushed over by Culver, is what makes it feel less satisfying. Yeah, there's that. But yeah, then we end, you know, like Discovery saves the day and is delivering dilithium to everyone. It could have been so interesting to have been like, how do we find an alternative to dilithium instead of solving, I don't know.
Like,
what was it? SB19, open up warp. Like, there's so much you can do with that.
The Borg doing? Do the Borg need dilithium? That's my question.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing that I always thought, like, you know, Romulans don't use a warp core. Like, Romulans use a forced singularity.
Mm-hmm.
And dilithium is used so that you can, like, add matter and antimatter in a controlled manner.
Options.
Yeah.
So like, brings up a whole new area if the Romulans are now in a seat of power because they don't use dilithium. Like that's also an interesting way to look at it.
Well, and for all of it, like, you know, apparently the like Discovery can work without a warp drive. And, you know, just pop, you know, like I'm going like you don't need the reason why you have a warp core isn't because, you know, like it does some magic thing. It's because it gives enough energy to create the warp bubble. Come on, basic engineering here, guys. I don't know what's happening. Anyway, I don't want to be that bubble. So, like, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Did you see, Chupi, that they found a frog in India with a mushroom growing out of it? It could possibly drive the spore drive.
Booyah.
There we go. Spore drive happening.
One of the cool things that come out of these last few episodes is that we now have someone other than Stamets who can power the spore drop.
Yeah, cool. I mean,
The last every, of his kind.
Oh, I will oh, say, boo. I know by end of next season. Boo, boo, boo. But by beginning like, of next book, season? spoiler book right. And David Ajala, like the addition of Book is so great. And David Ajala is lovely. And I'm like, I want a spinoff with him by the end of this. I hope he's like at the Academy with Tilly. I don't know when the Academy series is taking place.
Well, he's supposed to be in jail. Yet. And like, you know, and I see him bounce around season 5. So I once again, yeah. Nepo Star Trek.
I love seeing Book and Burnham together. Mm-hmm. Like I love them as a couple.
I don't know if y'all have watched, there's a new series on the Paramount channel on YouTube called Stargaze, and the first episode is a conversation with Sonequa Martin-Green and Tawny Newsom. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend. It's a super fun combo, and Tawny Newsom is just delightful and silly. So I would recommend that if y'all are looking for some content in between now and the new season in April. But yeah, I think we did it, y'all.
Chupi clarified. Thank you, Chupi. I appreciate it. Yeah, he was given. Thank you for the clarity.
Rescue refugee duty, not to jail.
Oh, but, yeah. One last thing. Mm-hmm. In the second to last episode, like, you know, the tide, I finally go like, oh, that's why you have why ship book. Ugh. That's why book ship like Transformers, because the transform mm-hmm. conduits are all full of junk. And so you have to go in order to use them, you have to be able to go exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, last time I was dogging on that and like, why would you do that? Now I have an answer. It's not my favorite answer, but it's an answer.
Yeah. Yes. I'm excited to jump into season 4 with y'all. I was like, ooh, we get some fun stuff next season. It's going to be, it's both sad and interesting.
It's going to be me.
It's gonna be me. All right. Season 4, part 1. We will be back next week talking about it. You can subscribe, rate, and review on Apple as well as on Spotify. Leave us those reviews. We really appreciate it. It helps other people find the podcast. You can join us over on Patreon. Come hang out in the Slack channel. We'll be doing another bonus episode this month for our patrons. So keep an eye out for that as we prep for season 4. We can talk about what we want to do for our patrons, but let us know if you have a request as we're prepping for the last season of Disco, if there's something you want us to talk about in the Patreon episode. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Star Trek Pod. Anything y'all want to plug, promote, or chat about before we go?
Nope, I am good.
Same.
Amazing. Thanks, everyone. We appreciate you. We'll see you next time. Live long and prosper. Bye.